Dennis Shepherd.
All right. What year did you graduate, Dennis?
1965.
Okay, yeah. And today is July 13th, 1998.
Right.
Okay. When you attended Hyman High School, did you stay on campus at the Hyman Settlement School?
Yes, all 4 years that I was at Hyman High School, I stayed there.
So you started when you were a freshman?
I started when I was a freshman in 1961, in the fall. At that time, Nathan, we came, incoming freshmen had to come and work 2 full weeks, I believe, prior to school starting. It was a kind of an initiation process of fitting you into the settlement school and learning your way around and helping pay for keeping you there.
So that kind of paid for your tuition?
Right. The tuition was very minimal. Seems like it was somewhere in the neighborhood of $15 for a semester, but you worked 2 hours in the afternoon after school and usually a half a day on Saturday, plus the 2 weeks prior to school starting.
What work did you do the 2 weeks prior to school starting?
A little bit of everything. Maintenance. At that time, we had a garden, several gardens. This mountain back here behind us was a potato patch. We had gardens over in where the ball field is now in front of the library. We had a garden up the hollow where the cabin and the art, the crafts cabin is, and a barn with the wood chairs. We made the wooden chairs. We went to the woods to get the trees for them.
So you attend the garden and help with maintenance and
yeah.
They show you around campus during this time?
Right. We learned our way around. We learned what the rules were and what regulations were. They were quite different, at that time than they are today for any organization. You know how that is. Times change. But at that time, Nathan, we were, the settlement school was going through quite a bit of change. We had just completed the Maystone building, and it was just being finished that summer that I came in 61. Several cousins had helped build it. It was built by the boys, basically, with the adult supervision, and they did most of the construction themselves. So we moved in, the girls moved in that dorm, and we came in about the time that those changes were made.
What was the name of the building that you lived in when you were?
We lived in Eastover.
Eastover. Where was that located?
That was located where the apartment buildings are on the hill now, above the office building there.
Okay.
In that general area, there was no parking up there. There was only a walking path across the bridge that's still there. The cement bridge was there then. And this was the boys' dorm. We had a house mother, Mrs. Frady, whose son was superintendent or the principal of the Hyman High School at that time.
What was she like?
Mrs. Frady was a stern house mother and needed to probably to be more stern than she was with a bunch of boys like we were, but she was a real good person and really cared about the boys. She insisted that we study. At night, we had a study hall from 7 to 8 on school nights, and we were expected to do our homework and study and be quiet. We all came downstairs to the general area, and then we had to take showers and get ready to go to bed. And the lights were out probably at 9 o'clock in those times, and we had to be quiet. Whether we were in bed or not was a matter of the speculation there, but we had to be quiet at least when the lights went out, and we did stay up lots of times late at night and talk as long as we did. As long as she couldn't hear us, we got away with it.
Because you didn't make too much noise.
Right.
Tell me a little bit more about living arrangements. How many people were in the room, or was it?
Basically, it was an open
open area.
There were partitions, but the doors were no longer on the openings. They were left open. If I remember correctly, there were a couple of rooms on this end that the seniors worked their way up to, and there were like 2 guys in each one of those. and the other areas, there may be 8 to 10 guys in the old army cot type beds. And it was very cold. They had the old water forced radiators, hot water forced.
Yeah.
And they didn't work all the time. And when they did, they were very noisy. The pipes were clanging all night long. And many of the windows, of course, it was not insulated. It was the old type building that just had the cracks between the boards with a strip over them, and no insulation. Windows were single pane, and many of those were broken out. So it was cold. We'd put sheets, we'd tape blankets over the windows to keep the snow out at night.
So I bet. So in the winter, did it get pretty cold?
Got real cold in the winter. It certainly did. But they gave us plenty of blankets. We had, they were probably donated from Army surplus and things, but we stayed warm that way. It was an adventure. We didn't care, Today we'd probably complain because of the heat and the cooling, but at that time, it really didn't bother us a tremendous lot.
Now, did you stay there on the weekends also?
We did. When I initially came there in 61, possibly 62, you were required. You didn't go home every weekend. You were required to work Saturdays, a half day Saturday. So you were allowed to go home Thanksgiving, Christmas, and maybe another weekend. Now, that eventually changed. By the time I was a senior in 95, we were still doing, I think, the half day work on Saturday, but they gave us more freedom to go home. We could go home almost any weekend. But that's how we paid for our tuition, was to work on the weekend.
So after your work was done, then you could go home?
After the work was done, we could go home. Families would be there waiting when you got off, and they usually had lunch for us on Saturdays. And once you had finished lunch, you were allowed to go home. And you had to be back at a certain time on Sunday. And if we came back, I think we were required to come back in time for church services on Sunday evening. If we stayed over on the weekend, we were required to go to church on Sunday morning.
Where was the church at?
Church was of our choice in town, and all of us ended up choosing the Methodist church because it got out a little earlier than the Baptist one did. We enjoyed both, and we had some excellent ministers back then. End up most of us going to the Methodist church because they usually didn't conduct the service as long as the Baptists did.
So you went to church in town and you got your choice, but
yes, we had the two. We had a choice of the Hyman Baptist or the Methodist church was about it. The Ibis Bible Church was up there, but it was a little harder to get to.
Yeah. On those Saturdays, did you have any certain work that you were all? That you were responsible for?
Usually we did have, that would vary, but in general we were assigned. At that time we had Luther Bentley, who was the maintenance supervisor, and Roy Noble, who did a lot of the grounds work, and then Lee Thomas, who was in charge of the workshop, who did the chairs.
Yeah.
So we may be assigned to one of those three, and of course occasionally that would vary for different reasons, but basically, I was assigned to Luther Bentley, and he did the maintenance. We did electrical work under his supervision, whatever was needed, which was minor at that time, electrical work was.
Yeah.
We did those type things. Some of the guys worked specifically in the chair shop and those type things in the old barn over there, about where the pitcher's mound is now in the ball field. But we did a variety of things. There was always some need, the grass had to be cut, clean up details, repairs on the buildings, and whatever the maintenance crew needed us to do.
So during the school week, you didn't work?
Yes, we worked in the evenings.
You worked in the evenings?
We worked in the afternoons when we got from, we had a 2-hour work session prior to dinner each evening. The incoming freshman girls were responsible for doing the laundry. They ran the laundromat, and they did all the beds, and they did your personal clothing, too. I remember very well, they always starched the boys' underwear for for a trick. You had to. You were very lucky if you didn't get your underwear back that wasn't starch stiff, if they didn't get caught doing it. But they were responsible for cleaning the buildings. They came to the boys' dorm, and these were probably the older girls. They did the cleaning, straightening up, sweeping, and those type of things. Made the beds, and again there they would shortchange your sheet. They would take one sheet and fold it back up so when you jumped in the bed, you couldn't get in the bed. Those type of things.
Yes, little things.
Yeah. But there was a lot of fun and a lot of hard work. You know, we raised a lot of potatoes. There was a small log structure up where the little dam is now, the pool, and your office building.
Yeah.
There was a small cabin there that was the potato house, a coolum shed. And we stored huge amounts of potatoes in there. It usually probably carried us through the winter. We dug them back on the mountain. We brought them off by wheelbarrow and sacks. How many, I don't remember, but tremendous line. We always had a contest. Two guys would pair up, see who could dig the most potatoes. And that was Luther's trick and Roy's trick of getting us to work a little harder, you know. And they'd have some reward for us. They couldn't feed us, you know, a bunch of hungry big kids, big young men. They couldn't feed us enough anyway, so usually they'd promise ice cream or something.
A little more egg.
Yeah, so we...
So did you all raise a lot of the food that you ate?
We did. We raised a lot, and then they slowly got away from that. There was a garden in this area where this building is located. The girls' dorm was sitting about where the pool is.
So there was a garden here where the Human Services Center?
Right. This was a bottom out to town, and of course there wasn't a bridge down there then, but we grew quite a bit of garden there. And then by the time I was a senior, we probably weren't raising any garden or very little at that time. They had just gone to purchasing most of the food supplies.
What kind of rules were you expected to follow them?
They were strict rules, but not overly strict. We had quite a bit of freedom when we look back at it. Of course, at the time, we didn't think we did. We thought we were just terribly punished, you know, at the time. But we were expected to be in our dorms at a certain time. The men could, the young boys could go to town in Joe's Cafe over there. We could go over there at night or certain nights. The girls were not allowed to. Without supervision. They were allowed to go one night a week, I think maybe with supervision or something.
So the boys could go?
But the boys could go, and I believe every night.
Why was that? Were they afraid to?
Well, they were totally responsible for us, and they just had taken this responsibility of the parents, and they, you know, at that time, girls, you know, you don't see it like it was at that time, then girls didn't have the freedom the boys had. They were expected to behave differently, and they were expected to they were just treated differently. And we had the freedom to go over there.
So it wasn't out of fear that just because they were?
It was basically taking the role of parents. Parents didn't allow girls to go out at night.
Okay.
Like, you know, today girls have the freedom that boys have, which is the way it should be. But at that time, girls were not allowed to just be out without a chaperone or without someone else with them, but the boys were, and we'd go to town and stay at Joe's till we had to be back, and we had to be in our dorm at a certain time. We had to do our work. We had to keep our grades up. They monitored our report cards from the high school. You weren't thrown out with bad grades, but you were encouraged to improve them and work on them.
So if you got back, let's say you received poor grades, would there be any kind of punishment, like extra work or maybe more study hall?
No, but Mr. McLean, who was the director at that time, would meet with you, and he would
sit you down and tell you,
yeah, you need to really work here. You're for your future. Of course, none of us realize that our future lots of times till we were in the future, but there wasn't any kind of punishment for that. But we were encouraged, and our dorm directors kept us online, you know, and on task and so forth. We read a lot. I think that was my big interest because you had you couldn't do other things that that are available now. You didn't have, we had a TV in Maystone building that we could occasionally watch at night.
You did have a TV in Maystone?
The boys and girls would meet there and have those activities. And it was available if we missed a snow day. You know, if the school was called off, they had some activities that we could do once we got our work in. I think originally we worked a half a day if there was no school, like it was Saturday. Then they cut that down, I think, to we just did our 2 hours of normal work. But we had a lot of other activities. I know Mr. Singleton, Vesper Singleton, was principal at the latter half of my stay there, and he would let us fellows have a key to the gym, the old Hyman High School gym that's still up there. So we could go in when we got our work done and play ball for an afternoon, and we thought we were elected, you know. But usually he got us back some way. He'd call us when he had a truckload of blocks that needed to be unloaded and volunteer us to unload them, or lumber or something. But he was really good to us.
So you kind of paid for that privilege.
Right, we did, in some way.
Yeah.
With Mr. Singleton, you've always paid for whatever, but he was really good, a good fine fellow, an excellent schoolman. But we had a lot of other activities at night. We did the folk dancing certain nights of the week. We were taught folk dancing. We had a folk dancing group that traveled the country. We'd gone to Washington, D.C., and into Maine, down the East Coast once.
Were you involved in that?
Yes, we did. We had a real good folk dance group.
Now, who was in charge of that?
Mr. McLean. Raymond McLean.
And he would take you all?
He would take us. We did. We were on TV a time or two.
On local stations? Or?
No, this was, we were the Huntington station. At that time, that was probably about as close as we had anyone. That's when everybody got in the air with their old mountaintop antennas.
Was the Huntington?
We went to Florida, St. Petersburg, Florida, in the early 60s. And this was a national folk dance tour or something held annually then. We performed on the stage there with these people.
Tell me about the trip itself.
Well, he and his wife, we had, I think, two vans. They had a Volkswagen van, and I'm not sure what the other one was. But I do remember on the way back that we had a breakdown in the Smoky Mountains, which was typical then with an automobile, you know.
Yeah.
But, of course, all the guys volunteered to stay and wait on the van to be fixed. I think it was the Volkswagen van. Something went wrong with it. And so we stayed in the Smokies somewhere, and I don't remember any details. But the tow truck guy told us across that mountain down there and when we were on the way back. And the others came on with Mrs. McLean, and we stayed with Mr. McLean. Till it was fixed. We really enjoyed these trips. Of course, we were getting out of school. I mean, that was...
Oh, you get out of school for these?
Yes. We were. They would allow him to do this sometimes as we'd be gone a week. And probably growing up in this rural area, this isolated area, that probably did us more good than a week's school anyway.
Yeah.
Getting to see these things. We stayed in people's homes. We visited and two people usually to a home. They would have that worked out when we got there. They would have us assigned, and we'd stay, and we met all these people and lived in their homes that time that we were there.
Now, did this give you a chance to go to a lot of places you normally wouldn't have been able to get to at that time?
Oh, absolutely. We would not have gone. Not very few of us would have had opportunities to have done that. We went to Detroit, and a year after I left, they went out west and stayed about a week. The folk dance annual festival, whatever, I don't remember exactly what it was called then, but they met out there somewhere in Arizona. But I remember my younger brother went on that trip. They had a great time. Camped in the desert, did some things, you know. But we had really had a lot of opportunities to do several things. The DAR, of course, they're still a big part of the settlement school.
Big supporters.
Right. We did, we went to Washington, D.C. once, to do a folk dance performance for them.
For their big annual convention they have there every year. Yeah.
Then drove back down the East Coast and then spent a day or two just doing that and coming back through.
So you really got to see a lot of places.
Yeah, a lot of places, Nathan, that we would never have that opportunity to have seen. without that.
So that was it. You, I bet everybody really enjoyed that.
We looked forward to it. We loved it.
How many people would be in the dance group?
Somewhere in the neighborhood of probably 6 or 8 boys and 6 or 8 girls. I think it may have been 8. So you're talking about roughly about 15 or 16 students, and then the adults that went along, you know. So we had a lot of wonderful trips, a lot of real good times. Enjoyed it, sure did. But those were opportunities we had other than just the classroom. And we had opportunities to go to all the home basketball games, unless you were being disciplined for some reason. The away games, occasionally, the school would run a school bus, and we were allowed to go to those, if you could afford to go, which is probably at that time about a quarter or 50 cents for a game, you know, or something. But most of us didn't have very much money, and if we knew something was coming up, we tried to save our money.
Did you ever go to save your money to go to a big basketball game somewhere?
Or? Yeah, if we could go. We've gone, we went mostly, most of them were close by.
Close by.
Yeah. Most of them were, you know, Breathitt or somewhere like that.
Yeah.
We always enjoyed going to Breathitt because that was our traditionally one of our big rivals. The Carr Creek was a big rival at that time. It was a friendly, you know, a nice rival.
Yeah.
Hazard was a kind of a, one of those teams you hate, you know. Everybody hated Hazard. We didn't want to lose to Hazard. Yeah, they recruited our boys, you know, like Johnny Cox and all these guys that they had over there. He came from Carr Creek. You know how you develop those rivalries and a lot of fun though. We sure did. But we had a lot of opportunities. We had people visiting, and you know, people that came in. Mrs. Watts came back a lot then. She had just, you know, Mr. McLean.
She was retired, but she would still come back and visit.
She came back and stayed a lot of time. And of course, you know, we had to really spiff the place up when she was on her way, and we had to be on her best behavior.
So you knew when she was coming because they'd be like, they would tell you.
Yeah, we knew it. The recreation building, that's what we knew it by, is the one up on the hill, high up there.
The priest building.
Yes. And we could spend, sometimes we might be out of school a week. We had some pretty severe winters back then.
Yeah.
And we couldn't get home, most of us, because the roads were pretty bad into the areas. And we could spend days and evenings up there. We had a fireplace, and we could play checkers and do different things, or just sit around and talk. So we had a lot of things I don't remember us actually being bored. If weather was fair, we had an outside basketball court over there where the ball field is, in front of the library, that we could go play on. And in the winter, we could use the gym. They always fed us breakfast and lunch and dinner. Then they had one, after Mr. Singleton came, they had what they call the closed lunch room, which everybody had to eat at the school. So therefore, we ate at the school too, so there wouldn't be any difference. But before that, we always came back to the settlement school for lunch and then go back to class.
So you would come back and eat at the settlement, and the other students would eat at?
They could eat at school, or they could go to town.
Go to town.
Mr. Singleton changed that after Claude Frady left. He changed that to what they call the closed lunchroom. Wasn't very popular because everybody liked to go to Joe's for a hamburger, cheeseburger, and fries, you know.
I bet Joe didn't like it.
And Joe didn't like it either. He lost out on that money. But I can remember Mr. Singleton going down there and rounding up a few guys who weren't willing to live by the rules at lunch. And he would do that. He'd bring them back. But they were strict, a lot stricter then. The rules were a lot different, a lot stricter. But
Did they have to be, though? I mean,
well, at that time, probably. That was just the way people did things. You know, even your parents expected you to behave in a certain way. And no one had a car, you know. If someone had a car at school, it was some of the local fellows whose families were a little better off, you know. And they, of course, they were pretty popular if they had a car. But now I think every kid's got 2 cars, you know, just about. So that's the biggest difference. But we had a lot of advantages that the other kids didn't have, that just rode the bus or were able to get to school otherwise. And we were from the entire county. We, yeah. you know, we We've covered Beaver, Dry Creek in particular, all the cooks from over there. They were good friends of mine, and all those boys from up in there, the Littles.
Did you stay at the settlement school simply because you couldn't get to school every
right.
day?
Right.
Was that because they didn't run buses out that
they
far?
They didn't run buses out. I grew up at Decoy, and at that time, the only road in there was over. You had to go through five counties to get to there. We went into Floyd County, McGoffin County, Breathitt County, and back into Knott County to get to Decoy. It was 48 miles and across some pretty rough mountains, but now it's about 18 miles over there. So there's a big difference, you know.
So you just make a circle and come around.
Yes, you did. And some of the kids that lived over there, of course, the Breathitt Knott line went right through the grade school there at Decoy. And the kids, some of them lived on the Breathitt County side, and some of those kids went to Jackson and went to high school in Breathitt County, lived with relatives or made some other arrangement. But most of us came here to the settlement school. I don't remember exact numbers, but it seems like there was a total of anywhere from 80 to 100 or more kids at the time I was there, you know, boys and girls.
That were staying on campus?
Yes, at least that. And a lot, you know, they, like in any situation, some of your freshmen would get homesick and they couldn't make it, and they'd go home. They usually ended up, some of them probably didn't go on to school, but most of them probably ended up making other arrangements and going to another school or, you know, living with a relative or something.
When you were here, did all the board people that were boarding, all the students boarding, were they high school students?
Yes, at that time they were.
There were no grade school students.
There were not, as a rule, there were not. It seems like I remember an exception for some reason one time, maybe sickness or parents were lost or something, I'm not sure.
Okay.
But generally, it was high school. They used to keep both, but
yeah.
When I was there, it was all high school. The settlement, you know, you see it as it is now, and it was an entirely different look then. No bridges to drive over. You had to drive through the creek, and which generally meant you weren't coming over too many times, you know, in the winter or whatever on that. The buildings, Uncle Saul's cabin, we moved that when I was there. Well, we boys moved that cabin.
You were part of moving that.
We moved it. We took it, dismantled it. It was over in the bottom, almost down by the creek, down this way in the bottom.
The library?
In front of the library, but more down this way.
Yeah.
And we took it apart. It was getting flooded all the time. Moved it over here. Had to go cut trees and make the new shingles for it. We did those things with the Smith Branch, the property that the school has over there. And we cut the trees and made the shingles for it, the wooden shingles.
And did you have to, how'd you haul it over there?
We used a pickup truck, and we just moved what we could at a time.
Dismantled the logs and brought them.
Dismantled and brought them a few at a time, and numbered them and redid the thing over there. And of course, you know, I had to make some improvements on it.
Yeah.
So I think some of them were probably rotting, or we replaced a few maybe. There was also the industrial arts building was there at that time. The old log structure. There was two buildings there. This side of the library, there's a chimney, I believe, still standing.
Yes.
There was a building there that was their, they kept their looms there. They did, a lot of the girls worked in the looms. They made manufactured cloth in there. In front of that was another structure that was used, and I'm not sure what that one was, absolutely what that one was used for at that time. Maybe it was part of the looms too or something. But next to it then, almost in front of where the library is, was the industrial arts building. The high school used it. And I took industrial arts there under the Audrey Collins. He was teaching at that time.
What would you do in that class?
Learn a trade, you know, or everybody was required. The girls took home ec. And we took industrial arts. Of course, later they were, you know, used to. You never heard of a guy taking in home ec or a girl taking industrial arts, but that started to change, which it should. But we learned we'd make a bookcase, construct things. Learn. It was a basic, very basic course. They didn't have the things we have today.
Did you get to keep The work that you did there?
Yes. You were allowed to keep it. Some of the, I wasn't a great woodworker, but some of the guys were, you know, did real good work.
Yeah,
some of the guys had a lot of talent.
I understand some people made beds and
yes,
all kinds of things, and they still have them.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Some of the guys were really good. They made some very nice things. I basically nailed some boards together and called it a bookcase, but, you know.
Just that something to get by.
Yeah. That was my talent ability then. But we.
That'd have been me.
Yeah. Sharp, and but understood young people. He would give you every chance in the world to do the right thing. We really liked him a lot. I remember at one instant, we'd sneak out. We had gotten some big nails in a post on the back of the porch roof, and we would sneak out at night after we were supposed to be in bed and go to town.
Yeah.
And we did one night. We didn't do that very often because we were afraid of getting caught. But we did one night and went to Joe's late. Thought we'd pulled it off. And at breakfast the next day, a couple of us were eating at his table. And we were all just sitting around eating breakfast. And he says, looked over at one of us and said, "Did you guys have a good trip to town last night?" So you never got anything on him, you know. But that was as far as it went. But that was his way of saying, you know, don't do it anymore.
But he didn't.
But, you know, he didn't come down on us heavier, but he would have had we openly done it again. He just had a real knack for understanding people and handling a situation.
He'd do it discreetly. He wouldn't tell everybody.
Mr. McLean would get mad and rant and rave, you know, and get upset with you and carry on. And
he would just come to you.
He'd just do it in a quiet way, and you respected it more. And then you felt guilty, well, I shouldn't have done that. You know,
so he's one of those people that made you, he got you to obey by making you feel guilty for.
Sure. Yeah, he just had a way with him, you know. But, and he could, if you were having problems or something, he's the type to put his arm around your shoulder and make you feel, you know, less problem.
So if you had a problem, you could go and talk to him.
Anytime. He or Helen, either one. And they were just real, real fine people. They couldn't have found a better couple to have worked with the school. Situation they couldn't have. And then a lot of the staff, the ladies were getting older at that time, you know, and some of them were retiring. Mrs. Beeman, we called her the doc, the nurse. She was the nurse. And the building here in the hollow there was the infirmary.
Stucky building.
Stucky building. That was the infirmary, and he hated that place because if you got sick.
Oh, you had to stay up there?
Yes, you stayed there. Keep you away from everybody else. And I always remember, and she's probably not even living now, I'm sure. I don't think she is. But she played the piano, classical music on the piano out in the hallway. And she would demand that you take a afternoon nap after lunch if you were up there in the infirmary. Then she'd sit out there and bang on that piano all afternoon. But I spent 2 weeks there once with the flu. Didn't even know I was there 1 week. And we had a home ball game with Hazard the second week. And I wanted out. I was feeling better. But she was the law when it came to that. And the guy slipped me out the back window that night. And I went to the ball game. Never did get caught. But today I really believe that she knew it. I think she just knew it. She was another one that knew everything that went on. You just didn't, you know, she was very sharp.
About that time she wouldn't have.
Yeah, she probably just really didn't care. She couldn't officially let me go, but.
She was a lovely.
Yeah. But we did those type things, and that wasn't your favorite place to be.
But, I guess it got pretty lonely up there.
Yeah, it did. You know, lots of times you might be the only person up there for a week, nobody around. And she always made sure you got all your homework. They didn't fail to get that to you. Then Mrs. White played the piano, and I don't know, I guess she taught music. Mrs. White taught music. An older lady that retired probably when I was there or shortly after I left. She taught music in the schools, I'm sure. Real strict. All these people were. They were from the old school, you know, and had been there for years and years. And Then we had the director's house that burned. It was sitting here where, about where Mrs. Watts is buried.
Yeah.
And that burned shortly after, let's see, shortly after I came back here, I believe, to work. And something, it housed the old phone system, the old crank phones. We lost all of that, the controls, and then they modernized and put in the new phones. We even had, they even killed their own beef. They killed a large...
Where did they have the cattle at?
They usually bought it at the time. Now, they used to keep some cows, I think, in that hollow over there where the Craft Arts Center is, the Crafts Cabin.
Yeah.
But they weren't keeping them when I was here, but I think they bought a beef.
From locally?
Probably. I don't remember. I just remember that they usually slaughtered it over there at the barn and took it somewhere for packaging, and I don't remember where. We had different, we always had a large Christmas play. Did what they call the mummer's play. Everybody, during the 4 years, almost everybody got involved in that, had a part in it, sometime during your 4 years. And they had a big Christmas dinner for everyone. And then you were home for whatever period of time school was out at that time. We had sleighs that we could ride in the wintertime. The road came down from the infirmary. And of course, we always tried to go in the creek with it. The boys would, but we'd pack that down to it. It would just be a sheet of ice. Then we'd have to help all these ladies that, you know, Mrs. White and Mrs. Beeman down the hill to dinner then every night because they couldn't walk on it. But we had a real good time. He took us on camping trips down at Robinson Forest area. They used to take us down there. We'd go up in Little Buckhorn, they called it, camp out on the weekends. The guys would.
So they would have activities sometimes on the weekends for you? Mm-hmm.
Yes, they would. They'd do that, and then lots of times he would meet like Lionel and Frankie that taught at Decoy. They taught me over there. They would bring some of their older kids, eighth graders, and meet us over there. And we'd have a combined camping trip in that area. That's probably, well, that's basically about all I think of as far as the recreation.
Yeah.
Things on that.
Did any other members of your family attend Highland High School?
Yes.
Did they also stay at Selling School?
They all did. I had two sisters and two other brothers that stayed at Selling School.
Were you the oldest, or?
No, I'm in the middle. The two brothers are younger. My sisters were older, so I was the middle one.
So they had stayed here before you came?
Yes, my sister was here. She was a senior when I was a freshman. Then there was an older one that was gone, already gone. And then the younger brothers came later. One of them was here part of the last
year. So you already knew somewhat of what to expect when you were coming.
Yes. We visited. We were able to come. Sometimes a school would come as a group or the eighth graders because they would bring them to functions, to folk dances. And at that time, there were more of these schools than there are now, of course, in Pine Mountain and some of the others. And there was folk dancing was the big thing. And they did a lot of potluck dinners. You know, we would visit Pine Mountain. The next one might be here. They had some in Jackson, some at Anvil, other places I can't think of right off. Hazard, maybe. But folk dancing was one of the big entertainment things of that area, and that was our chance to get out and go to have those potluck dinners. Everybody took some food. The settlement school would take some, and then all the different groups coming in, and they would have folk dancing until 9 or 10 o'clock at night, and then you came home, had a meal, and then folk danced. And those were always nice. You met all these other people that way. The Rogers, that's where we met the Rogers family. It was from the Pine Mountain School. Peter Rogers, his family. His dad was director there, I think, at that time.
Let's talk about the school a little now. Who were some of your favorite teachers that you had while you were in high school over there?
Ms. Pratt, Baby Pratt.
What did she teach?
She taught English. Mrs. Stewart came in the middle of the year. I had Mrs. Stewart, and she's retired now too, Ray Stewart's wife. And she replaced a teacher that died. She and her husband were in a car wreck, and crashed with a train, and then she was killed, and he died a little bit later, I think, from it, Mrs. Hall. Pearl Combs' wife, Betty, she also taught English. She was one of my favorite teachers. Jack Cornett from the bank. I was in Jack Cornett's class when President Kennedy was killed, typing class. You always remember those things, you know, where you were at the time. Let's see if I can think. Pearl Combs. Pearl was one of my favorite teachers. I never played ball because we didn't have any place to play at Decoy. We'd just shoot around on the outside goal. But he always tried to get me to go out for basketball. I was one of the bigger fellas in a small school, you know. But had him in class, and he used to come in and tell me he's going to fail me if I wouldn't go out for basketball, you know. Of course, he was kidding me. But
you didn't want to play? Or?
No, I was embarrassed to because I didn't have any, you know, had not had any background in it or any training. I didn't.
Everybody else had always played.
Well, yeah, these guys all played locally here. Most of the fellows had organized grade school teams.
Yeah, and they were pretty good, too.
Yeah, we had some dandy ball players. We had some real good ones. Danny Turry was a good ball player. He graduated a year later than I did. Merrick Conley, some of these fellows. Strody of IGA. Or that's not the IGA yet. But those were some of my favorite teachers, you know. And,
What was so special about them that made you like
them? They were absolutely sincere in what they were doing. Bill Triplett and his brother Gene, which you probably don't know Gene, he's in Ohio teaching, but these people were, they were not there for any other reason other than to educate. They were totally committed. They did not need direction. They didn't need a principal that stood over them or hounded them to do a better job. They were just outstanding teachers. If you mentioned that you went to Hyman High School, that rang a bell wherever you went. They've got doors open that I don't know that we have that reaction today. And times change, you know. I mean, we've got a large.
Hyman High School was well respected at that time.
Very well respected. Very well respected. These people were just absolutely committed to doing a good job. They sure were. And basically good people. They were just good community leaders. And, strong, most of them in their church or family men, family women. They were good people. And that was basically it. I had teachers at the time that I liked because they were easier, but later on you began to realize they weren't. You know, that wasn't your best teacher.
Yeah. You were saying Miss Watts would come and visit every once in a while. Did you ever get to meet her and talk to her?
Oh, yes. A lot.
What was your impression of her?
We were in awe of her. We were a little afraid of her. She was just, you know, very kind, but she had this personality that was, she's kind of stern.
She demanded respect.
She demanded respect just by who she had been and what she stood for. But she, you know, she was a very kind person. Very kind person. It was just that, you know, when you're young, and at that time, more so I think than today, Nathan, we younger people respected an older person just out of respect, you know. We enjoyed her visit. We dreaded it because then, you know, we had to be on our best behavior.
Yeah.
We tried not to get too much trouble while she was around, simply because I guess Mr. McLean didn't want her. He had taken over for her, and I guess he didn't want to show that he'd lost control.
He'd have been pretty pretty strict, harsh on you too. Yes. You messed up while she was around.
And then I worked and lived there, worked there when I first came back from college for a while too, and I knew her real well then at the Selma School. I taught a federal program that dealt with dropouts in four counties, Leslie, Prairie, and Knott. I was there about 4 years and I worked with that for the Selma School. So I knew her real well then. She wanted me to stay on when I had to take that job ended, and I had to get another employment, and she wanted me to stay on in some capacity, but there just wasn't anything there. I remember when Mike was hired, when your dad was hired, that I had some of the older people ask me about, you know, looking into being a director, and Mike was the best fit for it, because I wanted to see it stay as it had been.
Yeah.
And that was just sentimental things. And I couldn't see a change. Mike didn't have that attachment and sentiment, and he just did he was right for the right time in a new direction. Because I could see it going down, and my thought was, well, I don't want to be a part of it going down, because I see there's no need for it as housing for students. And I still wanted to see it be there.
Yeah.
And so I didn't have any interest in being the director.
I guess the housing for students ended sometime in the 70s.
Yes. I think there were still some when Mike was there, I believe, when he took over, probably a small amount.
Actually, one lived with us for a while.
Is that right?
He was the last one.
The last one you had.
And he ended up living at our house for a while.
Yeah. But it's made tremendous strides. I mean, in a role that was needed right now, it's doing some really great things.
Tell me a little bit about your graduation ceremony. What was that like?
Probably not a lot different than it is today. In larger numbers, of course, today, but we simply, we had the baccalaureate services on a Sunday. Then we had the graduation. I'm not sure, but I don't believe you had as much public and parent participation in the actual graduation ceremonies as you have today. And that's simply probably because they couldn't get there. You know, the bad roads and the distances and lack of transportation.
Were your parents able to make it?
My mother, I don't believe, made it. We simply didn't have a way of getting there. My dad had died when I was real young, so he wouldn't have been there. But I don't recall that she made it. Transportation was just not a...
It was terrible.
Yeah, it just wasn't any. One person in the community may have an automobile, you know, so...
And even if they have an automobile, the roads were...
Right. Very bad, very bad.
And but, few and far between.
Right. But I remember the ceremony, and I remember, you know, it was a big thing, and it was impressive. But not a lot different than it is today, other than just a little bit of style and a different dress. We were a lot more conservative. I know kids today wear their shorts and their tennis shoes, you know, their robes, and that's, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, us older people, sometimes we like to frown on those things and say, well, traditionally you should do this and that. But that doesn't have a thing in the world to do with it, you know. Really doesn't. We have to, you know, when you look at it realistically. But we were more conservative. We wouldn't have been allowed to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, we would have just been said, you're not going to graduate. You go get dressed correctly or forget it. It was not a lot different than it is.
Did you see a lot of changes in the school, in the Hyman Selma School, from your freshman to your senior year?
Considerable change. Not a tremendous lot, but see, we had the old building that was there, and you probably may have seen photographs of the old building that was there where Maystone is now. It was a dark wooden structure, you know, with outside stairs, I think, going up to the second level. I don't remember very much about it because it was gone when I got here. But I had visited and seen it.
Yeah.
A lot more open campus, different requirements.
Some of the buildings changed.
The buildings changed tremendously. We started taking out, when we built a new library, and taking out the old building.
I guess a lot of those buildings were basically run down by the time they were old.
They were. They were very old. The industrial arts building was very old and run down, and the floors were giving, and the structure itself was settling and getting flooded where they were down there in that area.
Tell me a little bit about the impact of the settlement, what it's had on your life.
I don't know, Nathan, that I can tell you how much of an impact. It was tremendous. It was like day and night difference. Without that, it would have been really hard to have gotten a high school education and to have gone on to college, period, you know. Education was stressed by the school, by every employee at the school, from the janitors, from whatever. You were encouraged, you were pushed, and you were given direction, and told you really need to go on, and, you know, go on to college and do these other things. It opened up, when you grew up thin, you know, out in these rural areas, you were, of course, limited to contact with a lot of the rest of the world, and you were not familiar with it. But through the settlement school, we made those contacts, started seeing what the rest of the world was, and, especially trips for folk dancing purposes and whatever other reason. And then just the variety of people that you met. You met all of the people in the county. They had an impact on your life. You made friends that were friends for life. Just learned an entirely different world than what you'd grown up in.
How about the impact of the settlement on this area?
Again, you know, without it, we probably wouldn't be anywhere near where we are. No school system. They were the original school, and they did such a job setting up a school that when the county did officially take it over and manage it, you know, that's one of the reasons I believe that Knott County was always historically known as an education county. It was simply it had basically been started by the settlement school, and that carried over for many, many years into the public system. It was expected, and that's what they were used to.
They were still involved with the public schools, though, weren't they?
Oh, yes. They were involved. They sent out staff as much as you probably do today, you know, on that. They sent out teachers that the school system could not have afforded. Music, arts. Ms. Naomi Powell, I think, originally came here probably because of the settlement school. These people did things that our grade schools would not have been able to have done without that help.
Well, is there anything that I've not asked you about that you feel is important, or maybe some story or special memory about the settlement school you'd like to share that comes to mind?
Well, it seems like we've covered pretty much everything, Nathan. It was like it was a large extended family. You felt close to most everyone. Of course, you were closer to some people than others, but it just generated a feeling that we were all one group, one family, and we stuck together for whatever reasons. Basically, we had a lot of good students come from that group. People that have gone on, I have a friend that's a professor at Eastern that stayed in the settlement school with me, has his doctorate. Those type of things, I think it just gave a lot of those people, you see it and they come back yet today, and Mike can name them better than I can because he's in contact with them, that are very successful. And I think it stems from what they got there. Not just the settlement students, but also those people who went to the old Hammond High School. Successful people, and their children are going on to be more successful than they were.
Appreciate it.